All right, members, I call the meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order. All right, thank you for letting us know there's some error in the minutes. We're going to wait until Monday to do them and correct them and bring back a good version. So we will do that. And we're going to have a little switch in the agenda. We're going to have, well, I have it here. We're going to have Representative Edelson go first because she needs to run to another committee, which I think a lot of us have to do today. So we will start with House File. I got to grab it here, 768. And Representative Edelson, I will have, well, Representative Christensen move Representative Edelson's bill before us.
So moved.
Thank you. Representative Christensen moves House File 768 before the committee with the intention of it going to Ways and Means. So, Representative Edelson, would you like to proceed and describe your bill?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's good to see you today. I just want to, Leon is right next to me. He's an Edina student. I'm really happy to have him here with us. It's my honor to present. Whoa, that was really loud.
There we go. Now a little louder.
All right. To present House File.
We're always recording. Don't worry.
Okay. It's my honor to present House File 768 before you today. I have served on the Special Education Advisory Council. I have two children that have special needs and have really worked. Our group in Edina has collaborated and worked on how can we better serve our community and our kids that have differing needs. Last year, the people, Anne Mondragon is, am I saying that right, Anne? There we go. So Anne is our president of our Special Education Advisory Council, and Jeff Jorgensen is from my district. He is the director of lifelong learning. We worked on this amending statutory language for 124D.19, which says a school board may offer this program. We're expanding it. Right now it's K through 6, and we'd like to expand it to be K through 12. Now I want to direct members to just really understand that this is a school board may do this. It is not a shed. This allows districts to meet the needs of the communities that they serve. What you will hear today is that a child with a disability after sixth grade, it doesn't go away. It's not magically going away. So we need to make sure that we're serving the populations and allowing our districts to serve the populations that they need to serve. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to my first testifier, Jeff Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, my name is Jeff Jorgensen. I am the Director of Student Support Services, and what that means is I work with special education services and disabled students across the spectrum to set up programming for them during the course of the regular school day and also during extended school year time periods. One of the things that I've been working hard on ever since coming to Edina is trying to improve the access of our students to after-school program that's typically offered by our community education program and other providers step forward during the course of the year to provide services to students, to all students, whether in the form of clubs, activities, group activities such as kids' clubs and after-school, before-school programs. We've had good solutions that we've been able to arrive at, and within our elementary programs, especially kindergarten through sixth grade, as we do have supplemental supports through this levy that allows us to hire additional individuals as necessary to meet and supplement the supports that are necessary for our special education students or students struggling with any form of disabling condition. It's been a very successful program, and many of our parents and students have benefited from that type of a service. It allows for inclusion with their mainstream peers. It allows full access as they are entitled to under ADA and under a free and appropriate public education. But what we're seeing is that that service has to drop off quickly at the secondary level or when students hit seventh grade because this funding source is not available to those students in the seventh through 12th grade. Now, many of our students, as Heather had pointed out very well, continue to struggle with those social elements or those physical impairments that will keep them from being able to attend just like any other students. Most of our services do charge some form of small fee for those students to be in attendance, but our parents that have students with a disabling condition oftentimes find their students not able to attend because the ancillary supports are not available to the students, leaving only one remedy, which is to try to go back to the IEP or the Individualized Education Program and the state and federal aid that's associated with that. But these after-school programs are not special education in nature. These are opportunities for a student to participate just like their regular non-disabled peers. And right now, we're limiting their access to those programs because we don't have an additional funding source to pay for the ancillary services that would otherwise be available. So let me emphasize, we're asking for flexibility in the application of the funds that are already there. And so the levy is there, but it's restricted currently to students that are attending kindergarten through sixth grade. And we're asking for an expansion on that so that we can leverage that same set of money as districts choose and apply and braid their funding sources to most appropriately utilize those funds to reach the students that need it the most. It's a diminishing number of students that are needing those types of services at the top end in the 7th through the 12th grade, but having that available would greatly enhance their ability for opportunities for inclusion, for being a normal citizen within their school program, and their ability to access programs just like anyone else.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. Representative Edelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My next testifier will be Ann Mondragon.
Go ahead, Ms. Mondragon. Come up to the microphone, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Ann Mondragon, and I'm a parent in the Edina School District. Leon's here with me today. He's my second grader, and I just wanted to, just a quick parent perspective is I am a stay-at-home parent, but the summertime has been really unique for us, and was really pleased to be able to access community ed programming a little bit last year for Leon. And through the benefits of the levy, there was extra support for my son in that setting. What does that look like? Well, Leo needs help being safe in his surroundings. He needs help getting in and out of his walker. He needs help transitioning from the floor to his walker and back. He needs help with toileting. He needs supervision. He can sit at the lunch table, but he needs someone standing behind him to make sure he doesn't fall. So that's what it looks like for him. Also, the real subtle things is Leon is very friendly, and he loves being with his peers, but he needs help learning how to be, how to approach his peers effectively, how to play with his peers. He has cognitive delays, and the support that we received in community education has allowed him to do so. And I can hire a babysitter, I can spend time with him, but he wants to be with his peers. And again, as we've all stated, that desire, that need is not going to go away in middle school. In fact, you as parents probably understand that need is even more so that they want to be with their peers and not be with their mom. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Mondragon. Representative Edelson, further comments, and then we'll open up to the audience.
Oh, sorry, I have two short testifiers. Terry Otremba, just is going to have just a minute.
Got it. Thank you. Please state your name for the record and continue.
Sure. Yeah, my name is Terry Otremba, and I'm a parent in the Edina School District. My daughter, Addison, is in fifth grade, and she has a rare chromosome abnormality, so she has some cognitive delays as a result of that. This program, obviously, we have concerns as she's reaching middle school, but, my wife and I both work, and so the challenges of trying to find support as she gets older becomes more challenging. But what we've noticed, we have her in the before and after school care programs, and it's helped her tremendously on developing her social skills. She's developed a sense of belonging and confidence that we haven't seen. She's developed some really true friendships with a lot of the typical developed kiddos who, not only her exposure to be around those kids actually value from it as well because they're around her, and as they go through the school system, they develop those friendships, which has been amazing. So, this is a real important program for us, it's kind of funny. Spring break's coming in about a week and a half, and Addison yesterday was like, "Hey, Dad, can we stay home from spring break?" I said, "Why?" She goes, "I want to go to Wise Guys. I want to hang out with my friends." So it just shows the value and excitement that she has, and it makes her more successful in school as well because she has that sense of belonging of being there with her peers. So thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Otremba. And Representative Edelson, you have one more testifier?
Yeah, Madam Chair, yes, thank you. It's I have Val Burke from, she's our Edina Community Education Director.
Ms. Burke, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Valerie Burke, Community Education Director for Edina Public Schools. It's my honor to be here, and I just want to say we support the flexibility to make additional accommodations for all of our students in our school. We pride ourselves on an all-for-all mission, and really believe that the kind of social and emotional supports and accommodations we can apply to all of our students is instrumental in their growth and development.
Thank you, Ms. Burke. And I also want to thank Leanne for being here with us today. I appreciate that. Representative Edelson, did you have anything else to say?
Madam Chair, no, I'd be happy to take questions.
Wonderful. I'm going to open it up quickly to the audience to see if there's anybody else here that would like to testify. Seeing none, members, any questions? Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Edelson, for bringing this bill forward. I work in school-age care, and so I'm aware of kind of the concerns that folks have about the programs being expanded. I'm just wondering, I'm not 100% clear on how the funding mechanism works. So if this additional money, is that something that has to be used for the above sixth grade students, or is this something that we could use kind of across our system?
Mr. Jorgensen.
Yes, I can speak directly to that. So the funding that is being collected currently, again, is regulated on a needs basis to K through six. What we're taking a look at here within the first year in terms of the changes in the documentation that is currently there is just allowing flexibility in terms of the utilization of existing funds across the spectrum as is needed. Additional funds would be levied in the same way that the current levy is being collected in the second year, where we try to expand the levy to be inclusive of how many students would be accessing those services. Those funds wouldn't necessarily then be ear tagged. We would not want to limit that. What we'd rather do is to say any additional funds raised would allow us further flexibility in how we would meet the needs K through 12.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. Follow up, Ms. Representative Wasilek. No. Any further questions, Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Jorgensen, so school age care now is in your district K-6. So when you extend it to 12, aren't you going to need a different kind of staffing as, you know, children like this lovely little guy proceed, and how will you make adjustments for that as the program has to extend? Because I know school age care is very important across Minnesota, because certainly in rural Minnesota where I live, it is. But if we add these upper levels, aren't you going to have to redesign your program? I'm looking at the requirements, and I would think that training secondary school students to work with younger children, which I know occurs because it does in the schools that I represent, would be a challenge. I think we would probably need a few more adults. So, Mr. Jorgensen.
Thank you for the question. Thank you for the question. Yes, I agree with you completely, and these are some of our best laid plans that are already being put into action. Mm-hmm. We work very closely from the Special Services Department, where we do establish services and exceptional services for our students with paraprofessionals and ancillary staff that really know the true needs of our students and know how to service those needs throughout the school day. Those individuals oftentimes are the ones, the very individuals, that are working in the after-school or before-school programs to assist our students in the same way, because familiarity is enormous, and understanding the specific needs of the students being served is truly a benefit. And that's where Val Burke and myself, Community Education Director, have worked very closely together within our systems. My staff train the staff that she hires on for those before school and after school activities. And oftentimes, as I said, she's actually hiring some of the staff that I employed during the course of the school day to provide those very services to students that allows students more full access, and we can meet the needs of the students more fully. So as we move forward, obviously there will be training efforts that will go forward, but we already have a very good template for how to go about doing that, because we have been doing that in our K through 6 programming already.
Representative Erickson, hello. Representative Barr.
Madam Chair, to either anyone who wants to grab this one, the funding number on 3.6, you're going from basically 7 years of education and adding six. You're not quite doubling that and factoring in even a little bit of increase in inflation. That number is an increase of almost 550%. And I was wondering how you derived at that number.
Representative Edelson, I don't know if you have any comments, but I also have Mr. Strom here that may be able to answer.
I was actually, Madam Chair, I was going to ask for Mr. Strom to be able to walk through the numbers.
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, members, the school-age care levy program currently is about $17 million of revenue. The equalizing factor, which shows up on 3.5, provides state aid to very low-value school districts. There's low-property-value school districts. At that level, an equalizing factor of 2,318, that's so low currently that the aid that goes out with the program is less than $1,000 statewide. So by increasing the equalizing factor from that lower level to $12,590, what that does is for the property, relatively low property wealth school districts, provides more state aid as a part of the program. Our the rough estimate when Representative Adelson put this bill together, and we're waiting for the fiscal note on this bill, would be that the revenue increase would probably be somewhere in the $4 million range. And by increase statewide, and by increasing the equalizing factor by this amount, the lower value school districts would pick up state aid for their programs. Relatively property wealthy school districts would still continue to levy the full amount of the program. But statewide, then, that would keep the levy cost of the program unchanged. So it's a big increase in that equalizing factor, but the aid levy ratio would go from essentially zero aid to $17 million of levy to, if our estimate was correct, to about $4 million of aid and $17 million of levy.
Representative Byer, does that answer? Wonderful. And this is one of the reasons why we're sending it to Ways and Means, too, to go down to Ed Finance. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Erickson asks part of my question already, so thank you for that. But this would be to Mr. Jorgensen as well. Just a clarification, the initial remarks we heard was after sixth grade, the need it continues. But I thought I heard you say the numbers drop after that. And could you clarify a little bit or explain what happens there?
Mr. Jorgensen?
Yes. So the number drops a little bit because of choice activities. When we talk about K through 6 programming, our activities after school are generally larger activities that are inclusive of all students, whereas when we enter into the middle school and into the high school, those are considered to be more enrichment-based activities or choice activities. So they come in the form of clubs, they come in the form of activities where any student can participate in some athletic activity, or they can participate in an intramural activity. But those become choice activities, and just like any students, our student numbers actually do begin to drop even in the regular education population and how many are accessing those after-school programs. And so there's a natural drop in our disabled student population as well, because many of our disabled students, again, may be attending those after-school programs K through 6, but as they get older, they do make choices of their own as well in terms of those preference activities.
Representative Bierman, follow-up.
Just to follow-up and a comment, then. That makes complete sense, and that's kind of what I thought. There's many diverse activities for kids these days in so many schools. I think it's a great bill. I like the local ability of schools to decide how to spend those funds, and it's a good bill, so thanks for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Any other member questions?
And Madam Chair, do you mind if I just, according to statute, and this would not change, if the school board chooses to not expand this, they don't have to, but they could also choose, statutory language offers that they could choose to go with another community group. So this is just, again, the importance of this legislation is allowing communities to take care of the students in their communities. And I think it's a good piece of flexible legislation that really empowers our locality.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. I think we just heard your summation there, unless you have some final comments.
Well, there would just be one other, which is we did talk about an expansion upwards, but we did not address the expansion downwards, which is with schools being pressed to do more and more pre-K type programming with ages 3 through 5, that's also another consideration for the committee to think about. As this bill progresses, because it is something that, again, we're spending a lot of time in school activities, and those are types of after school, before school activities, as well as parents seek out childcare to help surround the preschool activities that are going on out of the school.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. With that, Representative Edelson, we renew the motion that House File 768 is referred to Ways and Means. Any further discussion on the motion? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm going to vote feelings. That way everybody can decide whether I self-identify for or against the
Representative
bill.
Representative Grunhagen, we're not going to go off course today. Thank you.
Right.
Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? House File 468 is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you. And we have up next Representative Kunesh-Podein, House File 247.
Goodbye.
Thank you for coming today.
Madam Chair, I brought donut holes.
Representative Kunesh-Bordin, you have House File 247. Would you like to move the bill in front of us?
So moved, Madam Chair. Thank you.
House File 247 is moved in front of us with intentions of moving it to Ways and Means. Would you like to proceed describing your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chairs and members. This bill is to create a grant to encourage school districts to reincorporate library media specialists into their programs. It is a grant that would allow rural districts that are missing that part, that important element of their curriculum, back into their curriculum. It would allow schools in the Twin Cities area to reinstate library media specialists that had perhaps had to be cut during the really tough times. And the reason that I am bringing this to you, of course, first of all, I am a library media specialist, and I've been working in that role for the last 20 or so years. And the value that a library media specialist is often overlooked in a school system. But the really sad facts are that from 2007 to 2017, Minnesota has lost approximately 25% of our school library media specialists. Only 685 of our schools have licensed school librarians in their schools. That leaves 1,160 schools without any licensed media staff and without school librarians teaching information literacy skills. Students struggle to identify fake news, real news stories from sponsored ads. They don't understand the value of research and resource and getting facts in order to, you know, separate them from fiction, and the technology skills that they will need to be 21st century learners is often overlooked, and then we kind of wonder why our college kids aren't ready to create and prepare, really well-researched, really well-written information in any source. So colleges report that students arrive on campus without the research skills that they need, and never mind growing readers. Helping kids find the just right book to read and curating a collection of resources to support students in their learning and reading is a vital part of what we do as library media specialists. The lack of school librarians in Minnesota is really a really dangerous downward trend. Excuse me. Governor Waltz wants to increase full-service community schools, and ideally this would include the services of a library media specialist to support students, teachers, parents, and the wider community. I have two people here that I would like to invite to share their information and their experience. The first one is my friend and colleague, Sally Mays. For the past 2 years, Sally has made my transition from school librarian, media specialist to the house to be exceptionally easy. I literally could step out the door, she would step in, and I knew that it was in good hands. And so she has now really officially retired, and she still subs for my sub at school, but I asked her to be here today in order to share her wealth of knowledge and her experience and help you understand the value of a school library media specialist.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Bordin. Ms. Mays, will you state your name for the record, please, and proceed?
Certainly. My name is Sally Mays. I'm a retired library media specialist. I prefer the term teacher librarian. And I actually was at Robbinsdale yesterday subbing for your sub.
While our superintendent was here.
That's right. And one of the things that I wanted to do before I even got started, could I see by a show of hands How many of our representatives and guests today had a school librarian growing up? Well, congratulations. And now you are elected officials serving the people of Minnesota. I rest my case. But in all seriousness, this is kind of a big deal. We have many of our districts that have chosen to forego a library media specialist, teacher librarian, because of cost. This bill would help get those vital teachers back in the classroom. We often hear from our districts that they'd love to have a media specialist, but they're too expensive. And my contention is, and the truth is, you can't afford not to have a library media specialist. We are another adult in the building supporting students. And at the middle school and high school level, that's like gold. In addition to our role as a teacher librarian, being a reading advocate, teaching research skills, and allowing our students to be able to evaluate sources, we also teach internet safety. Sadly, many of our students, while being very connected, don't have the skills and the maturity level and the tools to make sure that they're being safe online. And that's because many of their parents have not taught them that. We also assist teachers and counselors by providing books for special situations. If you have a divorce in your family, if one of your parents is jailed, you probably don't want to talk about it, but you would love to be able to read a book where a student has to work through the same issues. In addition to being a teacher librarian, we provide individualized instruction. You can't get any more individualized when you turn to a student and say, what is it that you would like to read, or what would you like to find more about? As a technology integrationist, this is another role that we fill. We can often work with classroom teachers where we will go and say, let's see if there's a way we can have your students demonstrate what they've learned in a new way. A good example of this is fifth graders who created a web page on a book that they'd read and wanted to have somebody else read. We then had the fourth graders evaluate the web pages based on their persuasiveness and how many wanted to read that book. Now, I know how to make a web page, but it's mind-blowing to me that the tools are now available for fifth graders to do that. And what a great skill that is. When you know how something is put together, you also know the ways where people put together very slick-looking web pages that aren't credible. We also provide professional development in our buildings. We help our administrators and other students and staff use all the technology tools that are available. Now, I hope I'm not speaking out of school. Yes, that is a pun. When we tell you that we often help our administrators best use their email and other tools that are available. What else can I tell you? We also do team teaching, and we thank you so very much for your time. Do I need to finish? Okay, thank you so much. I urge you to support this bill. Library media specialists really make a difference in student achievement. I gave you some handouts that demonstrate that. And when we talk about library media specialists, we also talk about the equity and the equality. So if some districts have them and other people don't, that's an important consideration. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Mays. Representative Kunesh-Badin, you have another testifier?
Yes, just one more, if you'd like to.
Could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ann Walker-Smalley. I'm the director of Metronet, which is a multi-county, multi-type library system headquartered in the Twin Cities. Excuse me. We support all types of libraries with training and resources. although our primary focus is school libraries, K-12. But we also work closely with our academic libraries in the Twin Cities. And one of the things I'd like you to think about is how prepared you want your students to be from wherever they are in the state of Minnesota when they get to college or their post-secondary option. Because we believe, and Metronet has a long-time program where we work with teams of teachers and media specialists in a building to assist teachers in teaching these great research skills in their classroom. Because I think one of the reasons administrators say we don't need media specialists is because they're teaching it in the classroom. And our experience is with the teachers is, no, we don't know how to teach it in the classroom. And librarians, of course, are experts at information and teaching information because we know how information is created, how it's organized, how it's retrieved, how it's applied, how it's evaluated. So we work with this very closely. But when we talk to our academic library partners, they say their worst experiences are that Sunday night before the big papers are due and those first-year students are weeping at the reference desk because, well, one, I wrote my paper and now I need the resources to support it. Kind of backwards, but it happens. But also they're so frustrated because instead of their first step on their research process being a librarian, it tends to be their last. And from my perspective, and I believe from the perspective of media specialists at academic librarians universally, if we can begin incorporating research skills in kindergarten and that there's a coordinated research curriculum from K-12, by the time they get to their first year experience, whether it is at a vocational career-focused school or whether it is a highly selected college, they're ready to move forward. And as Sally mentioned, this really is an equity and issue because if you have a media specialist, you're ahead of the game. You know, our academic partners say, we can tell if these students experienced an organized library collection with a professional media specialist when they approach, because they know how to ask the right questions too.
That's right.
So I do think this is a great step forward, this bill, and would really help with the equity issue throughout the state. So thank you, Madam Chair and the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Walker-Smalley. Representative Kunush-Badin, any other comments before we open it up for questions?
Nope, I'm ready.
All right, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is so much I like about this bill, and I was just thinking about the research people we have in this building that help us. And
yeah.
I mean, what a gold mine. When we need something, we call on the specialists and we get what we need. And it's just so such a basic building block of our, should be a basic building block of our education that it's needed, and I support it wholeheartedly. And I'm also thinking, as you started your presentation, about our schools, and you say, well, they cut the media specialist because of funding. And we cut the school nurse, or we make it part-time because of funding, and we cut the counselors. And here we are with the problems we see and hear about every day in every committee. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do, and this is just one of those fundamental things that we need to put back in place so that we can teach our students to have that critical eye, but they need a starting point. And so it affects everything else down the line. I like the bill, the way it's structured, especially also that it's awarded equally metro and non-metro priority to schools without the media specialist. And I like the fact that the funding has a sliding scale over the years as schools get back up and running with this position. So very good bill. Thank you. Support it wholeheartedly.
Thank you. And before we go to more member questions, I was remiss in not opening it up to the audience for testifiers, and I believe Mr. Heller had asked to be put on the list. So, Mr. Heller, would you come up and like to speak to the bill? Mr. Heller, it'd be easier for you to be by the microphone. So, yeah, one of the
black
chairs.
May I just respond to? Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Yes.
May I just respond to Representative Bierman real quick?
Yes, real quick.
You referenced how we provide resources and help students
and gave our research people here the call out. But we don't just work with our students. Library media specialists work with all of the teachers when they have a project or a plan that they want to do, and they're going to ask for resources. We curate those resources. If they say, we want to do a research on this, that, and the other, we look for those books that we have in our library. We go to the public library and fill in the blanks that we don't have. We work with the teacher to create a list of online and other resources that are available. We teach our students how to access those and how to look for them very carefully. So there's a lot that library media specialists, teacher librarians do outside of that realm of books and research. And there's hardly a library media specialist I don't know that will go above and beyond to ensure that those kids and our staff have the resources available to be successful.
Thank you. Mr. Heller, would you like to make some comments?
Yes, my name is Rick Heller. Thank you again, Chair, for allowing me to testify today on education policy today. I unofficially represent twice exceptional and print disability. You will find twice exceptional not defined in House File 1370 on line 1.18. Hopefully we'll have something on that. However, the print disabilities are expressed in the Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008 with one other type of handicapped person that is blind. There's also expression in the ID Act of 2004. And the librarians, I believe, were the ones that came up with the word print disability in 1931. So speaking on this bill today, 247, I had to share some information with the author of the bill prior. And it has to do with some stuff the Minnesota Department of Education is currently doing called Assistive Technology Teams acquiring AEM, which is Access Education Materials, Print and Digital Materials. It's a State Department that is doing this. It has to do with getting information to people that are blind and print disability. Now it's called print disabled and reading disability. You find the new compliance of assurance special education form was just done last month. They're still currently working on that because they were mandated to do that. You find that in that compliance assurance, which is the special ed director has to sign those and the superintendents. And the whole thing about that is that they get these materials to the kids in a timely manner for their instructions. I don't know if anyone's willing to have that discussion. The other document I shared with the new changes on a federal level, the Institute of Museums and the Librarian Services were merged end of last year. And it's called the List of 5-Year Plan. And on that, you will find pages of print disability. And State Service of Blindness picking up some of that. Yet specifically, that's a silo that they work for the blind and vision impaired. However, if you go there with a print disability, they can provide those accommodations. However, only in Minnesota that I'm aware of, that only a medical doctor can prescribe a print disability. And I'm not quite sure if this bill, even though it expresses it, that says the line 119, the education must specify, okay, but there's nothing in there on training. And if we go to the second page, on lines 325 and through 2.27, which is attaining technology standards, I'm not sure if that's Minnesota Content Accessibility Law, 508 and Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, or is technical literacy that, and then media literacy. I understand that these things perhaps are embedded in the standards. However, the piece is, I'm not sure if this bill goes far enough to include training, what the State Department is currently doing. And unless you flag that training as it lets make sure that how people take source code materials from the National Instructional Accessibility Center, where you find the five types of people that become eligible for digitized books and how they can adapt them or, if necessary, modify them in a timely manner in the least restricted environment for instructional purposes. But remember this, not only is that an instructional thing, but when they go home, is it at a level that they can access to can be engaged so when they come back to class, they can be engaged with their peers in the classroom. Otherwise, you're going to get a disconnect.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. And this bill has another stop, so I suggest you take your comments and concerns offline with the author after this. So we'll proceed to member questions. Representative Hewitt.
Excuse me, Chair.
Mr. Heller, please, we're going to member questions now. Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kunesh-Pravin and testifiers, I'm perplexed with your job in a way that I see in my own sons that research is different than it was in the 80s. And it concerns me that even with some of the things when people come and visit me in the office of where they're getting their research from, and it seems to point more towards internet research versus digging into it. And even the other night when we had the testifier, those gifted, talented students that were part of the student press corps, how do you get it right with them now? How do you make sure they go that next step? Is that something they're doing, or are we just saying, oh, go to the internet and Google it. Mr. Google will get it for you. And I'm hoping that's not where we're stopping, because I think a lot of them are. So can you kind of share shortly about that with me, please?
And who would like to take that one?
I'll start, and then either of these ladies can chime in, because they also are the experts on that. So part of our responsibilities is to address the standards that ITEM and the state of Minnesota has put in there. And one of the standards is information literacy and the ability to be able to teach kids to discern authentic first-person resources. And so starting at a very young age, we practice and we talk about and we discuss what are viable resources and what are some of the more responsible internet sites or databases that the students can go to. One of our jobs is also to create online resources. So if you go to almost any library media specialist website in a school, you will see on their site, and we call it our lib guides, our library guides, all these links and all these databases that are trustworthy, that have 100% authentic, reliable information. And we help them learn how to search the internet using, you know, the important keywords, how to look at a website for authenticity, for the author, for the date. Is this an outdated piece of information? If it's from 2001, is this the best piece of information? Let's see if we can't find something more current. And so that is absolutely one of the parts of our jobs. And, you know, when it comes to creating our library collection of books, we are constantly weeding out old information, old books that maybe haven't kept up with the current information. Sometimes it's really interesting to look and see what was in these nonfiction books or these books 20 years ago compared to now. You know, encyclopedias. We hardly ever will buy print encyclopedias anymore because there's so many incredible online encyclopedias and databases that students can go to. But that's what we do. We guide the students towards the information that is really going to make the difference for whatever they're doing. And, you know, it's one of the joys of our job.
Would you like to add anything quick before we
move on? I would like to add one of the primary responsibilities of the media specialist in consultation and collaboration with a classroom teacher is teaching an actual research process.
That's right.
Step one is define your question. So we work with teachers, a media specialist work with teachers to create those plagiarism-proof assignments, but also assignments that allow students to address an issue of interest to them, but then follow a 5 or 6 step research project. Develop your question, find your information, evaluate your resources based on what your media specialist has developed and provided. Learn how to present your conclusions in a persuasive manner, and then evaluate the entire process. Right. Did I answer my question originally? Where did my question change? Where did I find additional resources, sort of thing? So it's a package. It's a package. We, yes, have all the reliable resources, but in collaboration with classroom teachers, it's the research process. I began a class on this with teachers and said, okay, describe your research process to me. And it was a history teacher, relatively recent grad. And he said to me, no one has ever asked me that question before, and I don't even know where to begin. So I think this, what you're saying, Representative Hewitt, is how do we do this? It's a lot of steps and definitely a process that involves thinking about it in collaboration with the classroom teachers.
Thank you, Ms. Walker-Smalley. Representative Hewitt, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that 15-year-old is going to have a lot to answer for now, so I appreciate that. And this is exactly why we need this, because we do struggle a lot with misinformation. Absolutely. Even when data is given to me here at the Capitol by outside sources, I really go through it and wonder where it came from. So I think this is really important that we fund stuff like this. So thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Badin. Any other member questions? Representative Erickson.
Just a comment, and thank you for your testimony, because a robust part of the language arts reading standards for Minnesota are delving into research, mm-hmm. how you find primary resources, and media and technology skills. So it is in our standards. So you might want your son to look at the standards, or you, and check with the teacher.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any further member questions? Representative Kudosh-Bodine, final words, and then we'll...
Well, thank you for giving us this time to share this really important issue that we have that sometimes is overlooked in our school systems and in our schools. And Mr. Representative Hewitt, you can always send your son to the Robbinsdale Middle School Library website. We have all those steps to the research process and how to discern really good information and how to put together good research. So when in doubt, just go to the Robbinsdale Middle School Library Media Center. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Badin. I renew the motion. The motion before us is for House File 247 to move to the Ways and Means Committee. Any further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? House 247 is on its way to the Ways and Means. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we'll move on to the final bill of the day. Representative Erdahl. House File 199. And Representative Erdahl, would you like to move your bill? It's going to be going to Ways and Means as well. Actually, I have a question real quick before Ways and Means. That's what I thought. It has to go to taxes. I was reading it last night and went, nope, this goes to taxes. So, Representative Erdahl, would you like to renew the? Would you like to make the motion for House File 199 to move to taxes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 199 be referred to taxes.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl moves House File 199 to go to taxes, and it's before our committee for discussion. Representative Erdahl, would you like to continue?
Okay, thank you. I once had the opportunity to meet with Pasi Sahlberg, the architect of the Finnish education system, in my office. And the discussions kind of went far afield, but he recommended three areas that he thought we actually would be attainable in Minnesota. I've been working on those things. One was to have a year-round student teaching program. All teachers in Finland have a year-long student teaching. A more robust mentorship program. And all teachers in Finland have to have master's degrees in what they teach, which is not the case in Minnesota. A relatively minor percentage actually have a master's degree in what they are teaching. And so, to make that more attainable, a few years ago, the legislature passed a bill to allow for tax credits for teachers getting master's degrees in their content area. Now, a group was left out unintentionally in that process, and this was brought to my attention by Senator Pratt. And you may recall a few days ago when we were meeting, Fred Nolan was here up here, and we went back and forth a little bit about this group. Teachers of concurrent education must have a master's degree. Typically, it's in education or in some other area. This bill gives a tax credit of up to $2,500 to those concurrent education teachers who wish to go beyond and get another master's degree in their content area. So, simple. Already had kind of the discussion of the day, so we're probably done now.
Representative Erdahl, did you have any testifiers?
No.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for this bill? Or against it? Testify on this bill. Sorry. We all like it, not against it. So, any member questions for Representative Erdahl? Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the bill. It is definitely a step in the right direction. My question would be, I'm just wondering what a master's degree would cost a teacher to go back and get one these days, just say from the University of Minnesota, and how it might be stretched to cover more of the cost. Because I think the $2,500 is a nice amount to start, but I think it might need to be more.
Representative,
and as I was looking at $2,500, I was actually thinking, is that per year of their needs, or is that just one credit one time?
Madam Chair, Representative Bierman, that's one credit one time, and you know I would share your belief that it would be nice to do the whole thing, but. I try to every now and then face reality and get what I can get, and I think that the $2,500 was a good amount that was arrived at in terms of what a master's degree costs. You know, when I did this a few years ago, I think I had that information. Someone else may be able to help me with that today, but I
think Representative Beer might be able to. Otherwise, I could too.
No, I can't help. I was sincerely asking what it would cost these days because I don't know. But, and I also agree with your statement that I don't want it to be free for anyone. I think when people really want to do something, it's good that they have skin in the game and they are contributing and they are. It costs them something to achieve it in the end, but. I just am thinking the number might be a larger number might be more helpful, but I certainly am going to sign on to your bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bierman, I've been doing research for my own master's, and it's about anywhere between $22,000 to $45,000, depending what schools and what degree, and sometime upward departure from there. So, yes, it's expensive. Representative Hewitt.
Just a quick get, it was right around that line, Madam Chair. Do you know, Representative Erdahl, is there, like, many of the districts, do they help with these programs as far as helping their in contracts or anything? Have you read anything about that?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hewitt, I think maybe it was more common years ago for school districts to offer some assistance to teachers getting master's degrees. I would suspect there are very few in the state that do so now. I will say that a close family member of mine, who is a athletic director at a suburban high school, managed to get a doctorate and with assistance from his school district.
Representative Hewitt, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think this is a great bill, Representative Erdahl, and I naturally, like you say, we'd like to do more, but maybe this is a good start, so thank you for offering this. I will support it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions at the table? Representative Erdahl, final word.
It's a fine piece of legislation.
Representative Erdahl, I concur. House File 199 is renewed. We're renewing the motion to House File 199 to move to the Tax Committee. Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House File 199 is headed to taxes, and I look forward to hearing it there as well.
Thank you.
So, we have some few announcements, too. First, I just want to thank members. We've managed to get through, I think, about 34 bills in the time we've been together. And now we're going to be rolling into putting a larger omnibus bill together. Monday, we are meeting back in this room, so we get a little bit of walk through the tunnels, at 10 a.m. It's my intention to have us done about 2:30 and having some lunch break in between and some time for folks before they have to get to the floor. And then that Monday, we are hearing a few more bills. Representative Sindel and Representative Lean, and those are also going to be moving to Ways and Means. And then we have posted House File 1711, and that is going to be the vehicle bill for our omnibus policy bill. So I will be presenting and doing a walkthrough on the omnibus bill that we hope to have posted by Sunday night. We'll do the walkthrough on Monday. Tuesday we'll meet at a regular time in a regular room to complete testimony, because we're going to do the walkthrough and start testimony. Tuesday we'll complete testimony. Amendments will be due by 2:30 that day on Tuesday, all the amendments for the bill. And then on Wednesday during our regular time, we'll be meeting to start taking up amendments. On Thursday morning, we'll finish taking up amendments, and during the ed policy time in their room, they were gracious enough to hand it over at ed finance, 9:45 to 11:15 on Thursday, and then Thursday evening we'll reconvene at 6 p.m. if we need to finish up and get it out the door. There may be a few more bills sprinkled in that day, that week. I'm just trying to look for a few more that we might be able to have go on their own that are real important to some folks this year. So with that, is there any questions about the schedule laid out or any other? Representative Mueller.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say thank you for keeping us on task and keeping us really organized. I really appreciate it. Oh,
thank you, Representative. Any other comments or questions? With that, we are adjourned.